Well, next hour, we're going to bring in our incredible guest for the program, Christian Wild, as we talk about some incredible health issues. And you know what? Name of the game is to stay healthy, because that is one of the most important things we can do on our planet. Then you take care of the people you care about. So Christian is next hour. In a moment, we'll be back again with our special guest this hour, Lon Milo Duquette, as we talk about Freemasonry and the Knights Templar right here on Coast to Coast AM. Lon, as I introduced you earlier last hour, you are a high-degreed Freemason. What is that?
Well, Freemasonry is really the oldest and largest continually operating fraternity in the world. I mentioned earlier that my father was a Freemason. You know, as a service organization around the world, it is the most generous. In the United States, Freemasonry donates on the average of $1 million a day.
Oh my God. A day?
A day to charity. It's a wonderful organization, just even in its aspect as a service organization.
Aren't the Shriners Freemasons?
Yes, they are.
They do a great job for children in hospitals.
They certainly do. And so it's a wonderful organization. Now, some people call Masonry a secret society, but it's not. But it is a society with secrets. But those secrets are really mostly have to do with the signs of recognition and portions of the initiation ceremonies, whereby one Mason can recognize another. The goals and the doctrines of Masonry are just open for anybody in the world to study. And some of the greatest people of the 18th, 19th, and 20th centuries have been Mason, including quite a few presidents of the United States.
I was going to say most of our forefathers were Freemasons, were they not?
Yes, a great many of the signers of the Declaration of Independence, the signers of the Constitution. In a very real way, the great experiment of democracy in the United States is an extension of Masonic ideals, and was initiated by people who were Masons. George Washington laid the cornerstone of the Capitol building in a Masonic ceremony in full Masonic regalia. He was the master of his lodge.
Why do some people think, Lon, that there's something up with Freemasonry, that they may be the Illuminati, they may be those that want to control a one-world government? But where does that come from?
Well, in a way, they've laid themselves open to that by trying to remain above all of that, and with their illusion of a bunch of guys getting together secretly. What's going on behind those tiled doors? You know,
Yeah. What's
going on there? And so it's very easy. It's human nature to be suspicious of something like that. And with so many individuals in such power positions of power, traditionally along around the centuries. You know, it's only natural to think, well, wow, all of these rulers of the world, you know, are Freemasons. Maybe the Freemasons rule the world. When in actuality, the self-transformational quality of the Masonic teachings, what they do is make a good man better. And it's only natural that somebody who has been made better intellectually, morally, everything else, will eventually find themselves in positions of power. So,
does anybody ever come up to you, though, and say, Lon, you're not telling us the truth. You're holding back. You're tricking us.
They say that all, they say that all the time. And the only thing that I can say is look into it yourself and you'll see that Masonry is a much, much greater and a much more positive organization than they can possibly imagine.
But has it changed, though, Lon? And by that I mean there's no question that the Masons have been doing a great job for society. Like you said, $1 million a day in charitable donations. I've witnessed Shriners doing what they do, and even though I don't like clowns, those guys I like. And I mean, there's no doubt they're doing that. Is it possible that those people, the ones I've just described, don't really know of the factions that may be way up there in the Freemason society?
Well, it's not a matter of being way up there, but it certainly can be a matter of way in there.
Explain.
And what I mean by that is Masonry is a very, very big tent. There are members of every political persuasion, from the far right to the far left to anarchistic. They all get together and are brothers within the temple of a Masonic meeting.
Mm-hmm.
It would be impossible for Masonry to promote a specific political agenda, either overtly or hidden, because of its tolerance for the freedom of thought. So there may indeed be Masons or people who are Masons who are very, very committed to certain political, societal dynamics and such. Okay, and they can be activists in that arena, but it's not Masonry that's driving them. That is a personal thing, and Masonry is not a monolithic organization where we're all on the same page on anything political or religious, mm-hmm. or anything to do with matters of conscience.
And they're not all plotting the overthrow of the planet.
No, indeed, we're not. But as I say, there may be individual members that have all sorts of political, social, and religious things, because Masonry is a big tent. And as long as they're true to the Masonic ideals, we stay out of each other's way.
They may be plotting the overthrow of the planet, but that doesn't mean they're doing it sanctioned by Freemasonry.
Absolutely.
The Knights Templar, did the Freemasons come from them?
We can't prove that. There's no evidence that on such and such a date that these Knights Templars, this powerful organization, went underground and reappeared as a benevolent society of men that use building tools as esoteric symbols. Okay, there is no evidence, and I don't think any evidence could be found. But from a traditional viewpoint, the ideals that have traditionally been applied to the Knights Templar, ideals of being militantly antagonistic to tyrannical governments, traditionally being antagonistic to any organization or any form of spiritual or mental bondage. These traditional qualities and goals that have been over the centuries at least projected upon the Knights Templar are those very same qualities, moral values and such, that led to the Age of Enlightenment in the 18th century. And many of the movers and shakers of that Age of Enlightenment were inspired by Masonic and Templar ideals. So there will be some Masons that will say, no, Masonry has absolutely nothing to do with the Knights Templar. They're free to believe that, okay? But by the same token, I'm a 32nd degree Scottish Rite Mason. And many of the degrees, or several of the degrees of the Scottish Rite, deal with the Knights Templar. And there's even a degree of the York Rite that's called the Knights Templar degree. So the Masons do indeed, officially, at least on some levels, adopt the Knights Templar as their traditional forebears. There's even a young men's organization called the Order of De Molay. Now, I was a De Molay when I was 14 years old, and part of our instruction was to emulate the qualities of fidelity, of friendship, of the moral qualities of that were displayed during the trial and persecution of Jacques de Molay, the last Grand Master of the Templars. So anyone that says that Masonry has nothing to do with the Templars is just not opening their eyes.
Three things woke me up to the Knights Templar in my career. One was doing programs on the Shroud of Turin, mm-hmm. where the Templars apparently were the guardians of. Mm-hmm. The Indiana Jones movies,
yes.
And the book The Da Vinci Code. Now, in The Da Vinci Code, it suggests, of course, that Jesus might have married Mary Magdalene mm-hmm. and had descendants, and they're still alive today. But you think there's something else there?
I do. And I believe that might be a whole lot more profound than just the idea that Jesus may have been married and have children, although that is a blockbuster.
By itself,
you know. But I think there's something else that the Templars may have stumbled upon, and which is still being perpetuated by Masonry.
And what is that?
Well, I guess you have to sort of know what the Knights Templar were about in the first place. Okay, it was around 1118. Some people say, you know, a little earlier, but it was when the First Crusade was won, and the Christian Crusaders were actually occupying key areas of the Holy Land, including Jerusalem. And nine French knights, you know, traveled to Jerusalem for the express purpose of founding a religious military order. And for some reason, the King of Jerusalem and the Patriarch of Jerusalem just immediately gave these nine knights what they asked for. And not only that, they were given as their headquarters a place that's for Jews and Muslims and Christians, mm-hmm. everybody, one of the most magical and legendary pieces of real estate in the universe. They gave them the ruins of the Temple Mount. And this is a place traditionally where heaven touches earth. It's a place where the Bible tells us that Abraham, you know, prepared to sacrifice Isaac. That was the spot. And it was the place where Jacob fell asleep and had the vision of Jacob's ladder and the angels going up and down. And it was the place where Solomon built the great temple to house the Ark of the Covenant. And it's the place where Jesus scourged the money changers. And it was the place where Muhammad took his heavenly night ride. I mean, this is a real hot spot. And for some reason, they just turned it over to these nine knights.
Why?
And we don't know. And for 9 years, these nine Templars, they didn't initiate any new members. They stayed billeted right there on the Temple Mount for 9 years. And nobody really knows for sure what they were doing.
Maybe they were guarding the Ark of the Covenant or something like that.
They were doing something, okay?
Yeah. And it was important enough for them to do it.
Absolutely. And, you know, I can't imagine these guys camping out for 9 years without even having to look around, you know. But whatever they found, whatever they learned, at the end of that 9 years, the two of them went back to France, where one of them met with his nephew, who was happened to be the future Saint Bernard, one of the most influential clergymen of the day. And whatever they told Bernard, it must have really blown his mind, because the next thing we know, Bernard has a talk with a pope, who then just instantly smiles and gives the Templars full papal recognition. But not only just recognition to form an order, for the next 200 years, the Knights Templar became the first really trained and disciplined army since the Roman legionaries.
But they did get slaughtered.
It took them 200 years. Okay.
Yeah, that's true.
And in that 200 years, they became a country without borders. They were the world's first multinational mega bank. They invented checking. Kings borrowed money from them. The Pope allowed them their own priests, their own confessors. They built their own characteristic churches. You know, those round Templar churches. A lot of them are still around. And just looking at this, it appears that the Templars had something on the Church of Rome. And it even appears, when you dig down a little more to their actions with the Muslims, with the Saracens, it even appears like they had something on the Islamic Saracens.
Did they practice black magic?
They were tortured. When they were busted in 1314, they were tortured and confessed all sorts of things. And we can whitewash the whole thing and say, no, they didn't. They must have just confessed, you know, because you can confess to anything when you were tortured. But there's a certain amount of consistency in the confessions that would lead us to believe that they probably did practice forms of religious expression that the church might consider black magic. But you know, in those days, the church would consider talking to your cat black magic.
That's true. No, you're absolutely right with that. Hey, Lon, I want to take phone calls with you when we come right back. But tell me a little bit about your presentation at the Conscious Life Expo this weekend.
Well, it's called, you know, Solomon's Key: Templars, Freemasonry, and Magic, and it's based on my book, The Key to Solomon's Key: Secrets of Magic and Masonry. And I sort of wrote it because, you know, deep down inside, I believe that the greatest evil in the world is religion used for political ends. And I think for the survival of life on this planet, that it's got to stop. But, you know, you might agree with me that the madness of all the religious strife that we're experiencing,
it's out of control.
Yeah, it's out of control. But, you know, it won't stop until, I think, a profound and fundamental change takes place within the heart of the true believers and the religious zealots who are tearing the world apart.
There's going to be a shock, though, in order for that to happen, Lon.
Well, wouldn't it be wonderful if we could give them a chill-out pill that would show them how ridiculous it was? And I think the Templars had that chill-out pill.
Then we need to find it. We'll be back in a moment. We'll open up the phone lines. We'll give you an opportunity to chat with him about the Freemasons, about Aleister Crowley, and about the Knights Templar. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, next hour, Christian Weil joins us. We've got some incredible medical news for you, news you can use. I call it Health Matters, and it really does. So stick with us for that. But when we come right back, we'll take your phone calls with our special guest this hour, who has been so gracious to stay an extra moment for us, Lon Milo Duquette on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back to Coast. We're going to take your phone calls now. Lon, your website, do you have one up and running yet?
Oh, yes, I do. It's lonmilo.com.
LONMILO.com.
Right.
Perfect. Let's take some calls. They're all jamming up here for you.
Oh, good.
We'll go to our West of the Rockies line. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Hello.
Yeah, thanks for calling.
Yes, I'm Paul calling from Seattle, Washington. It's an honor to talk to both of you. Brother Lon, hello.
Hello.
Hey, Lon, I was wondering if you could comment on the apparent magical war that Crowley had with McGregor Mathers that I had heard about.
Yes. He had a break with Mathers in the Golden Dawn, and they really did have what we could call a magical battle back and forth, and in a way they were both acting rather childishly about it. Both of them survived it, of course. I even wrote a screenplay called The Revolt of the Magicians that actually focuses upon that episode in Crowley's life.
Wow, that's great.
But it was pretty colorful. But looking at it from, you know, the luxury of the 21st century, it really was a case of both of them acting pretty childishly, because at least Crowley, you know, accused Mathers of hurling curses at him that killed his dogs and such. And
really? Well, yeah. Who knows?
Who knows, indeed. But they both survived it, and that's definitely not the main focus of Hermetic magic is such magical duels like that.
Are you a believer in curses, Lon? That they exist, they can happen?
Well, to a certain extent, yes, absolutely, because there is truly no limits to the powers of the human mind, especially when it's focused with full intent.
Does the recipient have to believe it? You know, does he have to say, "Oh my gosh, I've been cursed"? Oh, you know,
that brings in a whole new dynamic of it when they do. But really, no one can escape the natural laws of cause and effect, the natural laws of karma. So a magical curse is just an extension of actually going to the person's house and punching them in the nose. Okay. As a matter of fact, you would probably get a whole lot more done with a whole lot less karmic reaction if you didn't mess with your precious subconscious mind by hurling a curse at a person. And if you really wanted just call them out in the street and say, "Let's duke it out."
To the phones we go again. First-time caller line. Thanks for calling.
Hey, this is David from Burbank.
Hey, David. Go ahead.
Hey, got a question for Lon. My grandfather, great-grandfather, and great-great-grandfather were all 32nd, 33rd degree Masons, and my grandmother was the only one with, like, the information about all this, and she just passed away, and I really kind of want to get into it, but I don't know where to start.
Well, you can just start with the white pages of the phone book and find a Masonic lodge nearest you, and you're completely free to and welcome to contact me through my website, and I will be happy to refer you to a Masonic or lodge nearest you and give you what advice I can.
Okay. Also, I know we're from the Scottish Rite.
Uh-huh.
Do you think it'd be smart to find a lodge that was Scottish-based, or does it matter?
Oh, well, it's like this. To become a regular, what they call Blue Lodge Mason, it is a lodge of 3 degrees, okay? And everybody, no matter where they go from there, they need to be that third-degree Master Mason.
Yeah,
and then you have a choice of going to different concordant rites, and one of them is a Scottish rite, one of them is the York rite. You can do them all if you'd like, depending on how much interest you have and how much time you have on your available to you. So, but first you have to start with the regular Blue Lodge, 3 degree Blue Lodge, and that's and from there, you'll get a feel of what you would like to do next.
Okay, cool. I appreciate it, man. Thank you.
Okay.
All right, thanks, David. Appreciate you being part of the program. East of the Rockies, your turn. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hey, George. How we doing?
Good, thanks. This
is... Oh, man, so great to get through to you guys.
Thanks.
Wonderful show. Just a quick question. As far as the Freemasons go, I'm very familiar with the Scottish Rite. And, you know, once you get to the third level, you can kind of go one way, you can go versus the other. But you guys talk a lot about the Illuminati.
Yes.
And I understand the Illuminati really kind of comes from this kind of mindset and this scenario, if you will. But I'm just a little confused as to how that works. And I was wondering if you guys could shed some light on that.
Well, the Illuminati, which was founded in 1776 in Bavaria by Adam Weishaupt, was an organization that in itself, in its primitive form anyway, didn't last very long. When it was closed down by the Bavarian authorities as a subversive organization, it disappeared. But like I mentioned earlier about traditional history, is as important as history in organizations like this. The ideals that people have projected upon the Illuminati, and in this case, the ideals that they projected upon the Illuminati are for the most part sinister. Like they represented the extreme side of the forces that took over the French Revolution, etc. And so the Illuminati, so the echo of the Illuminati sort of haunts any secret society, right up, you know, to the Council on Foreign Relations.
And funny you say that, because a professional friend of mine is a member of the CFR, mm-hmm. and I've asked him. I said, Raymond, now tell me the truth. Are you guys one world government people? Are you sinister? Are you, you know, the Illuminati? And he went, heck no. But my point is I don't think he's at that upper tier. I think the upper tier, something could be going on.
Well, maybe so, but... you know, any organization that has their members at various levels have their regular interests in the world, and if those interests concern arms sale or the situation, political situation in certain countries, you know, they would band together to protect and perpetuate their own interests. But that's more on the level of a political machine than it is a spiritual or a fraternal machine. Granted, people like to deal with people that they know can keep a secret.
Sure.
And all of this is bound to happen. But that can happen with left wing, right wing, communist, anarchist, fascist, or just, you know, regular white bread Republicans and Democrats. You know, you can point to the fact that J. Edgar Hoover was a 33rd degree Scottish Rite Mason. There's a J. Edgar Hoover Museum right in the House of the Temple in Washington D.C. A wonderful Masonic building. And truly, I don't see J. Edgar Hoover as being, you know, on the same or tarred with the same brush as a one worlder, left wing Illuminati. Okay.
Right.
The organization that I belong to, Ordo Templi Orientis, in one of its higher degrees, one of the higher degrees is called Epopt of the Illuminati. So if you want to talk to a person who is an official member of that, of the Illuminati degree, okay, you're talking to him right now. And I tell you, I can't organize a box lunch, let alone rule the world.
All right, next up, let's go to our wild card line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi.
Yeah, hi. Welcome to the show, sir. Where are you calling from?
Right now I'm in Pahrump, Nevada.
Oh, interesting. Okay, go ahead.
Well, I just I heard your guest there, and I'd just like to, I think this would be the good for everybody. You know, I joined a volunteer organization. You know, a volunteer organization, and I didn't know anything about the Masonic Party. And all of a sudden, I found that me being an independent and being rather naive, you know, and I didn't join because that was connected with the military. And all of a sudden, I felt like Davy Crockett in the Alamo, and I was... you know, I just wanted to be a volunteer. And then I found out about all this politics, and, you know, I was virtually pushed out, and I really didn't know anything about the organization except that, you know, they controlled it, and they wanted their people there, and they didn't want anybody in that organization unless they were a member of the Masonic organization. And I didn't know nothing about Masonic. Pardon my, you know, not being that worldly. And I left me, it left kind of a scar on me. So I think maybe that's something for that there your organization to think about when somebody comes in, because I know you're a very powerful organization. And now, I really didn't know anything about your organization, but it seems that if somebody, you know, and I know you do a lot of charitable work and volunteer work, but it was like, if I didn't join, well, you were out. I was pushed out politically and, you know, well, and it sort of hurt me. Well, it hurt me, you know, because I just wanted to be a volunteer. So the reason I only called is just so that maybe the people that are in charge of some of these, which I know you're all over the world now, you know, they should think that over when somebody, maybe, you know, somebody comes into an organization to help. You know, I didn't know there was so much so much politics, you know, hey, pardon my naivety or whatever the word is, you know.
Well, you ran into, obviously ran into a very, very unfortunate situation, and a case of if the Masons in the lodge themselves were behaving like that. They were behaving in a very un-Masonic way and truly, truly abusing their Masonic principles and such, because that is... as about what you're describing is about as anti-Masonic in character as anything I can think of. But we always have to keep in mind that people are people, and especially in more provincial or rural areas, people sometimes do join together in cliques and attempt to abuse their own personal powers. And they, you know, can do so in the guise of Masonry, but certainly if that was brought to the attention of the State Grand Lodge, I think heads would roll, and because that you were certainly, not treated right. I would be mad too. Yes.
All right, Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Lon. Hi there.
Hey, George, how are you?
Good, thank you.
Hey, listen, I'll try to be quick about this. I don't mean to be negative per se, but I really have to take your guest to task when he talks about the benign nature of the OTO and the writings by AC, whose name I don't speak in full for a variety of reasons.
All right, go ahead, sure. And we'll let him respond. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, well, first of all, there's a reason why his books are kept under lock and key at all the major New Age bookstores, because his minions or followers, you know, are apt to steal them as a sort of initial initiatory rite, and that sort of just opens you up to all sorts of things when you start reading the books. I really suggest against it for anybody who's listening to go start reading those books, and yet, unless you are very, very well prepared to really defend yourself in ways that you're probably not capable of. The second quick point, if there's a book called Sex and Rockets, which reveals the early history of the combination of L. Ron Hubbard with AC, as well as the third person in their trio who founded the JPL Jet Propulsion Laboratory, George, and I think you'd really enjoy that book for what it reveals. And lastly, if I could just quickly, you know, just retell a quick story about when I had a personal confrontation with a close relative of AC. You know, this involves something in Los Angeles in the early 90s.
All right.
You know, there was a very high level of let's call it a drug, sex, magic, cult type activity going on with that person, who, along with, you know, a female, you know, cohabitant, would basically take in young women. And to the people that are listening sort of understand what this is about, would sort of tap their kundalini and kick them out in the street. And there was a cycle that they would go through over and over. And this, again, was a close male relative of AC. And I, you know, I didn't really know a whole lot about it at that time. So I got involved with that woman, big mistake, to the degree that I made, my biggest mistake was probably, and people probably heard the story before, but I made the mistake of giving a full body hot oil massage on the beach in front of this relative who had previously been involved with this woman. And within about a week from then, through a very strange series of synchronicities, I ended up working in a place that I had never worked before, didn't have any experience with something, compelled me to be there. And the very first person that showed up at this place, which was a coffee house, was that relative. And to cut to the chase, after you know, sort of getting right up in my face, you know, the person went and sat down in the coffee house, and I sort of went into some sort of trance-like state from which I sort of came out of being unconscious. And when I woke up out of that conscious state, I felt a breeze blowing by, you know, my hair, and I sort of disoriented. And what I realized was that the open steam generator from the espresso machine, from the big barista-style espresso machine, was open and on, and the only thing keeping my face from being burned off was my left hand, which was blocking the steam.
But are you saying that this individual had some incredible powers?
Yeah. Well, here's the key point.
I'm only got about 15 seconds
left. Bottom line is, something compelled me to jam my hand into an ice chest for about 5 minutes and visualize blue healing light. When I pulled it back out, what had been a bloody mess was back and healed and perfect. And the person who I'm talking about here, the relative, came up to me right then, and on his way out said, thanks. And so I felt like I'd sort of been through the whirlwind, and at the end I came to realize, don't mess with this stuff, because, you know, it's really interesting, and it's really, there's a lot of...
Okay, I got a gun. We got to run. We'll be back in a moment.